All right, welcome back to Lions Collective, live every single Wednesday at 6 p.m. or Tuesday or Thursday, depending on what's going on that week. I'm your host, Jeff Iafriti from CrunchTime Sports. Alongside me, Detroit Football Network's own Justin Rogers, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic. He is currently on vacation. He's grinding. I mean, he just joined CrunchTime. He's joining today. He's back, so no days off for Colton Pouncey. And then 97.1, the ticket's own Will Birchfield. We are back. Lions offseason stuff to get to. We're going to talk about it all, the Levi and Pascal stuff that I need help breaking down. I'm sure fans do as well. We'll get to the Kirby Joseph news, golf on Petsing, and we'll talk some Super Bowl at the end of the show. But how are you doing this week, fellas?
Doing great. Right.
Yeah.
Colton, you're a team player, bro. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, you know, I figure offseason topics.
Okay.
You know,
I don't know if my connection's doing okay.
Oh. We got you.
I was gonna say off-season topics, you know, are a little light, so I figured I'd help the squad out. Even though I'm really just chilling, so it's not a big deal. But
yeah, I love it.
The off-season vibes, you know.
Yeah. We need all the word salad today we can get. So don't worry, we got good topics, but it is that time. It's like this awkward period where it's like leaning up until you're kind of going up until the NFL Combine.
And yeah,
you know, it's like this dull period a little bit, but still plenty to get to. Justin's battling some connection issues. He looks fine to me, but, you know, we'll get him back at some point. I want to get right into the Levi and Pascal stuff and just kind of get it's two parts of it. I'm sure fans want to know kind of the why. And then after that, we can go into what Levi and Josh can bring to the table for the Lions, despite maybe people, you know, having doubts, but just to start with the actual reasoning, because I need the explanation myself, to be honest with you. I know you guys, and, you know, shout out Jeremy as well. A lot of people around the city did a lot of good kind of breaking down on it, but kind of break that down for fans. So why is Levi and Pascal back, and why there is a random ruling in the CBA that no one knew until like a week ago? What's going on? Or a couple days ago.
Take it away, J-Rod. You were the first on this.
Colton, get this started. I'm going to, you know what? I know it was, but I'm going to refresh really quick. So somebody get us started. I got a bad connection for whatever
You're
reason.
You're good.
yeah, I mean, oh, there he goes. All right. Three-man booth.
Peace.
Let me do one of these. I got you. Hold up. All right.
My understanding is that you basically just kind of put a pause. And I was telling Jeff this the other day, like, just the little bit I've done looking into this is that they kind of put a pause on the contract and it kind of rolls over for the next year. I'm not sure where bonuses and whatnot play into that, but it seems like both of them are going to be back. Now you can question whether the Lions maybe need some more juice in the pass rush department, but, you know, for the contracts that they're on, having both those guys back, if that's where they want to go with that move, I mean, it makes sense. That's good depth. Obviously they got to stay healthy, and that's been a major question for both of them, but you know, you can make the argument that bringing those guys back for, you know, Levi's a really good interior pass rusher when healthy. Pascal's pretty good in the run game, you know, kind of leaves lots to be desired in the pass rush department. But, you know, they're two guys that you trust, two guys that you know. So we'll see if they end up sticking around. But weird rule that keeps them around for a little bit longer than we thought, I guess.
Welcome back. I definitely fixed it. I just need a little unplug. And I don't know what happened there, fellas, but it's interesting that this came up because it was something that I casually mentioned to Burkett late in the year, just kind of seeing if he knew anything about it. Neither one of us really did. And, you know, one of those things that falls by the wayside. And then maybe, I don't know, a week and a half ago, somebody brought it up in my chat on my site saying, hey, it looks like Levi re-signed on one of the contract sites. And so, again, I put a pin in it, came back to it earlier this week, and, you know, found out that yes, you know, it did kind of trigger the CBA rule that causes the contract toll. And what it is when you're in the final year of your contract, in Levi's case, he was only on a 1-year deal. In Pascal's case, he was in the final year of his rookie contract, and you miss that entire season on NFI, there's an automatic trigger in the CBA. Nobody has to do anything. Nobody can decline it. It automatically rolls over your contract. I haven't quite been able to figure out all the details on how, you know, they were paid last year, how the guarantees carry over, you know, so there's still a little bit of information to gather there, but the base salaries aren't big enough to kind of fret about. You know, it's 1.5 million, 1.7 million, somewhere in that ballpark. You're talking, you know, not even double veteran minimum, a fraction of a percent of the overall salary cap. I think the Levi one is big. The Lions, you know, interior pass rush was something they really lacked last year, was a big thing that they lost when they lost him for the season. Pascal, you know, I don't want to disrespect the guy, but, you know, I think the term I've kind of used with him for a long time is replacement level player, right? Like, he's a very much an average player, not bad, not good, doesn't provide a lot on the stat sheets. I heard Colton mention, you know, need more juice. You absolutely need more douche on the edge. Like, you can't obviously rely on that to be your Aiden Hutchinson, opposite Aiden Hutchinson solution, or are even really a part of it. Like, that's still an area where Brad Holmes really needs to concentrate this offseason.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think Levi being back next year, assuming they keep him on the roster, could be really big. And I hesitate to hype up a player too much who does have limited surface level production over his four seasons and who obviously won't have played football in a full year entering next year. But the reasons that deal felt like a potential bargain when he signed it last spring are still true today. And I was going back and looking at some of what I wrote at the time, and I was kind of blown away at where Levi ranked among some of the interior pass rushers in the NFL coming off of the 2024 season, which, for the record, was his first season in the NFL with a clean bill of health. Even entering his rookie year, when he did play in 16 or 17 games, he had that lingering back injury from Washington. He wasn't fully healthy that year. So just keep in mind, 2024 was his first year where he had his body cooperating with his brain in a lot of ways. And so in 16 games, 45 quarterback pressures, which was tied for 15th among interior defenders with Aleem McNeil and Jeffrey Simmons. And he was tied for 10th among interior defenders in pass rush win rate with Dexter Lawrence and Vita Vea. And, like, albeit he was getting more snaps off the edge than those guys in particular, Lawrence and Vea. So maybe that spiked the numbers in his favor a little bit. But when you consider what his pass rush win rate was in 2024 compared to what the Lions had this year on the interior, even close to that level of play next year would go potentially a long way for this team. Like, his pass rush win rate in 2024 was higher by a good degree than anyone on the interior of that defensive line next year. And you know, I think at what looks like a $1.5 million cap hit, this could end up being really good value for the Lions. And, you know, I think it's likely that they move on from DJ Reader. And, you know, it kind of makes sense if you think of Levi back as kind of a complement to Aleem on the inside, and maybe Roy Lopez is back as a complement to Tyreek Williams on the inside. Now you've got the makings of what looks like a pretty good quartet on the middle there. And I agree, Justin, for all of the kind of consternation about the edge rusher opposite Hutch, the lack of an interior pass rush this year in basically every game besides Aleem's debut against the Buccaneers was maybe just as glaring and just as problematic.
Yeah, we'll see how the scheme changes or is tweaked in Calvin Shepard's second year. But, you know, the Lions really love playing with three defensive tackles, and the third one being kind of that 4-eye or 5 technique, however you want to label it. And that was the role that, you know, Levi really played. And you talk about his 45 pressures, and of course you'd like to see more of that turn into sacks. And that was kind of the discussion of, you know, can he become a 5 sack guy, if you will. But we didn't really get to see a full season of his breakout with Hutchinson, right? And so I think the compliments there is really what has the potential to be interesting. And I, you know, I see some of the comments in our thread right now, just talking about best availability being availability, right? Oh, you know, I don't correlate what Levi went through last year. It has nothing to do with what he went through early in his career, right? Like, the back injury he proved, which was the much bigger concern, he proved was behind him in 2024. The knee, it's one of those fluky things. It's unrelated. I see no reason why he can't come back and be a 15, 16, 17 game player this season.
There's also a weird discussion about whether I'm in a shower right now based on my background. For the record,
it does kind of look like a dog.
I'm at my parents' house. I'm in my mom's basement office. So she has this decor, okay, for the people out there. But no, Justin, I think you hit on some good points. And, you know, the thing I would say, I guess, is, you know, it's nice to have these guys back, but this can't be it, right? Because they had issues. No, we'll see if they bring back Al-Qaeda Muhammad. You know, he's going to be 31, had a year of career production playing opposite of Aiden, but there are times where he was sort of phased out of the game plan. A lot of his sacks came in bunches. So I think you're looking for maybe a little bit more consistency at the edge position. Now bringing a guy back like Levi, who can play inside or outside, that's nice. And getting him on, you know, what is it, 1.5, 1.4, something like that?
1.5,
I mean,
yeah.
1.5, I mean, that's a steal. So I think, I'm sure they're pleased with that. Now, the question is, how is he going to perform coming off an ACL? There might be some rust there. We saw Aleem kind of shake some rust off there when he finally returned. But
yeah.
That would be my question. But again, I don't think the price point is anything to be like mad about. And I know people are going to say, oh, Brad always brings back injured guys. And to a point, like we've seen it with Marcus Davenport. We've seen it with Emmanuel Mosley. Sometimes it just doesn't work out. But a homegrown guy that you trust and you brought here for a reason – the fact that you're able to keep him at this price point on a, you know, 1 year, I don't think that's anything to be too upset about. I think that's a positive. Now, Pascal, I do think they could probably use an upgrade there. And I would agree with the term replacement level player. I think they got to add some more talent there, whether it's in the draft or free agency, you need some more consistency. But in terms of Levi and that interior presence, I mean, they really needed it. I think the Lions were the third slowest team in terms of average time to pressure this past season. 30th in the NFL, 2.86 seconds. Average time to throw was the same, 30th, 3 seconds there. So while Aiden was racking up all these pressures and whatnot, which is good, that's what you want from your star edge, it was taking him longer to get there because he's getting chipped and doubled. And while Al-Qaeda did his thing on the other end in some games, a little bit more consistency, whether it's from that opposite edge spot or in the interior, would make a big difference.
Yeah, I'm also not convinced that Josh Pascal is on this roster when the season begins. Like, don't take this news to mean that the Lions and Brad Holmes are counting on him as one of their 53 and one of their key pieces on defense at all. Like, I'm going about over the cap numbers here, so I guess these could change as more information comes in. But as far as I can tell, while they would incur a dead cap hit charge if they cut Levi, they won't if they cut Pascal because of the lack of guaranteed money on his deal. So if they cut Pascal at any time before the season, pre-June 1 or post-June 1, they would have no dead cap charge next season. They would in fact save the entire potential cap hit of $1.8 million. And yeah, I get it. Like, that's not a whole lot. It's also something. I mean, it amounts to basically the same average annual difference in the contracts for DJ Reed and Carlton Davis, for example. But more importantly, I just don't know if you can really justify counting on Pascal next season, given what he showed you through his first few years here. And I agree. Like, I don't think there's any better guy in that locker room than Pascal, but the production hasn't been there on a consistent or splashy enough level. And like, as much as I was wowed by some of Levi's stats from 2024, so was I kind of unimpressed by Pascal's in the same way. Like I mentioned the pass rush win rate. Well, for Pascal in 2024, he ranked 66th out of 69 qualified players in that statistic. And it was lower for reference by a decent amount than Marcus Davenport this year, who I think we all would agree had a very unimpactful year for the Lions. So I honestly think that if you gave the 550 defensive snaps and almost 400 pass rush snaps that Pascal got in 2024 to say Ahmed Hassanin in 2026, he might end up producing similar numbers to Pascal. So, and similar builds in a lot of ways too, kind of stockier, stouter guys who can play on the edge. So I wouldn't interpret this news as Josh Pascal being on the roster when they set that 53 man at the end of camp next August.
Pascal's one of the great examples for me, just personal evaluations of how film doesn't necessarily marry to combine results, right? That's going to be a big thing coming up here is what did the guy run his 40 in and what was his three cone dash and what is his RAS? Like, Pascal was athletic as hell at that event. And then you go back and you throw on Kentucky tape. He's the last dude out of his stance every single snap. Like, it was wild to me, like, seeing, like, that's just something you don't see very often. And so, like, you just never saw the marrying of his athleticism and explosiveness to Sunday. And you know, it never came. And I'm with you. I'm not convinced he's on this roster. I don't think this guarantees it, but I still can't help but view everything through the lens of Brad Holmes' love for his own draft picks.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if that's softened. Injury seems to be the one thing that maybe gives them pause. I think of, you know, a guy like Melifonwu, but you know, Pascal checks all the grit and character boxes and all that stuff that they love. So there's no way I'm dismissing this guy not being on the 53 a week one.
No, I'm not either. But remember, with every year, there are more Brad Holmes draft picks on this roster. And it may well be that he has to choose between Josh Pascal and another one of his own more recent draft picks. And if that's the case, then you would assume he likely goes with the guy who's younger and probably has more upside. Say a guy like Ahmed Hassani, for example. I guess that's why I bring him up.
Is this the Buzz Lightyear theory?
I'm more of a Bud Lightyear guy.
Pascal's also the last defensive end that the Lions have drafted on day one or day two. So,
right, I mean, right. That's pretty incredible.
I feel like it's time for some fresh blood, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
Now that's a stat. Like that. Now you got me. That's a good way to close that out.
4 years.
Yeah, that's incredible. Not for the good reasons. But we can get, speaking of the injury stuff, we, you know, talked about Levi and Josh, some of their injury history. I don't know, this Kirby Joseph stuff, we've talked about it before. You know, I'm becoming a little more worried just as the days go on, because I don't know the answer, and no one really does, truthfully, except for Kirby and his doctors. Okay, I don't, as much as I respect Dr. Chow, all right, NFL doc for a long time in the NFL. For, I think, the Chargers, I think he was working with. And by the way, shout out Dave Burkett. He's done some incredible work.
Is Burkett week. I say it every year. He's the only one of us on the Lions beat that goes down to the Super Bowl, wherever it is. This is Burkett week.
I love the little Detroit Free Press backdrop that he's doing all these.
Oh, he just churns content.
Killing it.
That guy's shout out Dave. He's on a mission, man.
I forgot Jake Pete's even existed, and he already got the interview.
Yeah, I didn't know. I found out who Dr. Chow was. I read the story on All Lions, and they credited Detroit Free Press. I looked at it. I watched the whole video, and I'm thinking, this guy Dave, man, it's like he's teleporting across the country. Like, I don't know what he's doing. But anyway, I watched the interview. You got to see the insight there from an actual, you know, an NFL team doctor, and he's worked with you know, a ton of NFL players has dealt with injuries. Now, the big thing I want to make sure that's very clear is he does not have, and he made this clear, like the details of Kirby's injury. I think a lot of it was speculation based on, you know, a Jadeveon Clowney who had like a terrible knee injury, like a terrible knee injury coming out of college. And, you know, he's trying to make the comparison there. But in your guys' minds, I guess it's not to react and be like, well, Kirby's done, what do we think? But more of your concern level with the unknown here with Kirby Joseph, because he's locked in with his contract. If I'm not mistaken, is that contract backloaded? Is that how the contract's set up? I'm not 100% certain.
It's got a ton of option years.
Okay.
And what option years are, or option bonuses, I should say. And what option bonuses are they're almost like year-to-year signing bonuses. That maybe is the best way to put it. So if the team triggers the option, it acts like a signing bonus. They get that cash right away. And the structure of the deal was weird from the onset. I think most of us looked at it and went, what the hell is this? Like, it's strange. In light of the knee injury, I started thinking, oh, did the Lions know something? Were they building in outs for themselves? Brad Holmes was kind of asked questions about that topic at his season ending press conference and implied that they didn't know. I don't know. It feels like a very team friendly contract, and they are definitely in a situation where in 2027, if they want to get out with minimum penalty, then they are able to. So, you know, they're going to play through this 2026 season with him under contract and kind of seeing where this knee injury goes. But, you know, beyond that, you know, there's no guarantee that Kirby will be on this roster beyond next season.
Yeah.
It's crazy how far we've come. You know, when he signed that extension, you know, he got to say, I'm the highest paid safety in the NFL.
So did his agent.
Yes, absolutely. that's always a good thing to put out there. Yeah, I mean, after that, you kind of look more into the contract and you're like, Lions can really get out of this if they want to. And then, obviously, I don't think we knew the knee would, you know, be this big of an issue where I don't know how many total games he ended up missing, but, you know, they shut him down after KC and we didn't see him again for the rest of the year. You know, he tried to come back and work his way back, had some setbacks. I was told as he was working his way back, if he returned, you know, before the setback, it would look a little bit like it did early in the season, where he's clearly cutting it out and like leaving for stretches and coming back in pain and like trying to gut it out and play through. But that's just not sustainable. It didn't really make sense, especially, you know, as December kind of creeps on and like, oh, this is gonna be tough to make the playoffs whether we have him or not. So obviously decided to shut him down, and probably for the best, and hoping for, you know, better health in 2026. But you know, when we talked to him in the locker room that one day, that was one of the most depressing scrums I've been a part of that I can remember in my 4 years on the beat. He just looked so like dejected and like didn't want to talk to us. Obviously, I understand that, like, it's not fun to like have a serious knee injury and then have to answer questions for it. But you really felt for him because, you know, he was giving us like one word answers. He really probably couldn't, even if he had the answers, I don't know if he'd want to, but like, I don't know if he had the answers. It's just like, surgery is really not an option. Just got to pray for the best. Like, when you're getting those answers from a player that like is so impactful, such a like key core member of this team, and he can't even describe like what he's going through, like, that's pretty serious. So they're hoping that rest can alleviate some of the pain and that, you know, just take it easy this offseason and be better in 2026. But that's a serious question going forward. And it's got you paid and you view as part of the core. But if that knee doesn't cooperate, like, the future might be a little murkier.
Yeah, it's kind of stunning how much the situation has shifted in a year. Like, at this time last year, we were wondering when the Lions were going to give him the bag that he deserved. Kirby was talking about, quote, chasing gold jackets. You know, I remember talking to Glover Quinn myself in like December of last season about Kirby's legitimate candidacy for defensive player of the year. And, you know, now we're sitting here wondering, honestly, if he'll ever be the same. I think that's a very valid question to ask. We're wondering if the Lions are going to have to maybe draft his replacement this spring. I think that's a legitimate question to ask. And we're, you know, wondering if and maybe even when they'll eventually cut him loose from his contract. It's just kind of a reminder of the fragility, I guess, of NFL careers. Like, even for a guy who seemed like he was at the top of the world and top of the league, the ground beneath you can cave in but before you know it. And, you know, here we are today. And you know, I thought a couple quotes this year about the situation were troubling. One from Kirby himself. I mean, Colton, you just kind of referenced it, but I think the question he was asked was like, are you going to get this fixed this offseason? And he said, there's no fixing it. You just put it in God's hands and pray. And that was his way of saying, like, this isn't a surgically repairable injury. Like, this is just something that you're going to have to manage. And I think that's the other quote that stood out to me was from Dan Campbell, and he was talking about it. And I think someone asked him, you know, like, how does he get through this? And Campbell said, it's hard to say. I don't think it's necessarily going away. I think you do the best you can to manage it. And, you know, that is true today, and it's probably going to be true moving forward. Like, the way they talk about this, while they haven't released an official diagnosis, sure makes it sound like some sort of cartilage damage, some kind of tendonitis. And really the only way to deal with that, as far as I know, is, you know, strengthening the muscles around the knee and hoping that it responds well. But, man, the Lions are they're in a dilemma here, and they aren't, because, like you said, Justin, so much of that money is guaranteed money is in the front of the contract, that if they feel that it's just not worth keeping him around beyond next season, you know, it's only I think it's a $6 million dead cap hit in 27, and then $4 million in 28, and $2 million in 29. By the end of that contract, they'd be saving a lot of money against the cap. So I wonder if when they gave him this deal, they just had questions about his durability. It didn't have to be specific to the knee, obviously, because that didn't happen until camp this year. And then it was a separate knee injury that he suffered in week four against the Browns. But I do wonder if they had their own internal concerns just about how he was going to age. And maybe this was sort of the safety net that they built into his contract for themselves.
It's still crazy, man. I mean, he's 25, right?
Yeah.
But that 2027 decision is kind of a shit or get off the pot decision. Like the option bonus is $17 million. And so like you can't waffle. You have to know what you're doing going into that off season or going into that new league year, and make your decision. And, you know, I'm, you know, not going to try to project in the future. And I want to be careful. I also watched the Dr. Chow interview, and, you know, I'm a little leery that some assumptions are being made, or, you know, whatever you want to classify them as, educated guesses. What we do know, that injury bothered him all year. Came up in training camp initially, compounded with the bone bruise in week four. We know Dan Campbell hinted it could be chronic, but he also said the word might. Dan Campbell's a positive guy, so maybe, you know, that's just on brand for him. And last we checked in with Joseph, he said no surgery was intended. So we don't really know if it's tendonitis or arthritis, specifically osteoarthritis, which impacts the cartilage. You know, I think, you know, I don't know what Dave knows, but I, you know, just the way some of his questions were worded, with stem cells and cartilage, it felt like he was assuming. And then once he put those words into to Chow's brain, that was how the answers were kind of formulated. But the fact that microfracture surgery hasn't been mentioned, which is kind of the typical go-to when you have cartilage wear, you know, it's designed to, if I'm, you know, describing the surgery close to correctly, they drill a bunch of small holes in your knee to kind of spur blood flow and rejuvenation in those areas to kind of handle cartilage decay or wear down. And the fact that that's not being described, you know, I think is maybe encouraging. You know, maybe this is a jumper's knee situation. Maybe it's tendonitis. Maybe time will help it out. I don't know. You know, and I don't think any of us know. It was heartbreaking kind of listening to Joseph, not just then, but also after the Kansas City game, where I, you know, I had an opportunity to talk with him after kind of the locker room cleared out, and you know, to kind of hear that pain and frustration in his voice. But it's like anything else. You're kind of a prisoner of the emotion of the moment and the pain of the moment. And, you know, who knows that maybe 3 months off of it and not, as Brad Holmes said, pushing to get back every single day and pushing your body to the limit, maybe it will calm down. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, eliminate the possibility that he will be able to get better and get back to the player he will be, you know, with really a kind of a year for the team and him to figure it out.
I think the hope is that the next time we see him on the field, he's not wearing that massive knee brace that he had to wear when he tried to practice this season that looked extremely uncomfortable. And I don't know, in some ways spoke to a player who maybe wasn't even ready fully to be back out there. You know, each time or both times this year that he tried to practice after the injuries and after months off, he couldn't practice the next day. And that will be the most obvious hurdle for him to clear next whenever he's back on the field. But you hope that he can do it without having this like restrictive brace on his knee. And we'll see what that looks like come training camp or even OTAs.
Yeah. Chow mentioned Jadeveon Clowney, and, you know, he's been able to carve out a career for himself and keeps getting signed. But the thing is, it's like these 1 and maybe 2 year deals, I guess, for the majority of the last few years now. And when you're talking about a player like Kirby, who you extended, and that money's going to kick in here soon, as Justin mentioned, you got to be really sure about that. And if they aren't, then that's going to be a tough decision to make, or maybe an easy one at that point. But
yeah,
when you talk about, you know, we were just talking about Levi, you know, I think we're assuming that he's going to be back to health, but if there is some rust that can impact you a little bit, and maybe you're not getting the play that you thought you were, at least for a little bit until he shakes it off, as we saw with Aleem last year. Yeah. You talk about Kirby, like, we can hope, I guess, or people can hope that knee is fine. The Lions can hope that knee is fine. At least good enough to kind of gut it through a season, but you don't know how that's going to impact him. He's not going to be, he might not be the explosive center fielder that he was before. Doesn't mean he still can't make some plays, but maybe not the guy you're paying him to be. And then you're talking about Brian Branch, who, I don't know, maybe he comes back in October on the early end, but that's, I feel like that's still optimistic if that, and who knows if he's going to shake off some rust with an Achilles injury, right? Going to a contract year. So it just goes to show, like, as Bertie mentioned, how fragile this league is. And you can plan and say, well, these guys are going to be here for a while. This is our core. But this game is physical. It's violent. It takes its toll on your body. And, like, the picture changes. The math, the equation, that all changes very quickly for reasons outside of your control. So it's really unfortunate situation that we're having to talk about it. But it is a reality.
I didn't stick around long enough to hear what Chow said about Branch, but I did recently. I was gathering kind of information on all the Lions injuries from the season, and found a study that some major medical journal had on Achilles injuries for football over a 15-year period. And during that 15-year period, the average time from injury to return was 271 days. Now, that's going back 15 years. You know, probably the front end of that is shorter, right? Like, we're always improving our Adrian Peterson probably would return in 2.5 weeks these days. But I don't know. I did the math, and, you know, it kind of put Branch at return to play in September. And I think, you know, knowing the Lions and their caution, I think October is reasonable. But I left kind of reading that study feeling more optimistic about his chance to get back on field. But I also think back to Tracy Walker, you know, another guy, another safety, yeah, strong safety at that, that suffered a torn Achilles and just was never the same player after. And, you know, Branch and Walker, they're different caliber players. Maybe they, you know, the instincts are a different caliber, but you know, that's the concern. 'Cause that's a position that requires just such a quick first step and reaction. You know, will he be that same guy when he gets back, at least in that first year?
Yeah, the Tracy Walker example gets brought up a lot, and I think it's a fair, because people immediately just think, well, he's not Tracy Walker. No, but they're both safeties, and they both, and it's not just Tracy Walker. You can bring up examples of DBs in general that suffer Achilles injuries. I mean, it's very brutal. And I know Brian Branch doesn't rely on his athleticism, but it does. It's like you said, it's about playing the position that is probably the most concerning. And honestly, like, the mental side of things after you suffer an injury like that, going back to playing football and having to worry about, hey, I'm coming back from a torn Achilles, yeah, and you don't want to tear it again. So, I mean, it's crazy to think, you mentioned at the beginning, Colton, you know, 2 years ago, you're talking about the best safety duo in the league. And now you're talking about, you know, two guys that, I mean, the futures are just very, very unclear. So it's crazy how things can change. When we come back, we'll talk about Goff's comments on Petsing at the Pro Bowls. Speaking of Dave Burkett, the guy who holds it up. Okay, so we're going to talk about
– we wouldn't have an episode of Not For Dave this week. This
yeah, Dave Burkett, man, giving us content. And then before that, though – got to hear about our friends over at Sleeper. So we'll see you in 30 seconds.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right. Shout out to our friends over at Sleeper. You can deposit $100. You get a deposit match up to $100. Use the code HMA. You can check out Sleeper Picks. Of course, Sleeper Fantasy, Sleeper Picks. Very simple. Use it for the Super Bowl. You got the Seahawks and the Patriots squaring off. And whatever players you like, you pick more or less than their predicted stats, and, you know, you can win. You don't have to tell mine necessarily. I don't have the greatest gambling streak, so gamble responsibly and do your own research. But shout out to our friends at Sleeper for always taking care of us, sponsoring Lions Collective. Now let's get back to the show. We'll talk more Dave Burkett, as we should. he caught up with some of the Lions. Honestly, this is what I love what Dave Burkett did. Not only did he talk to Jared, but he got also in the reporting, like, perspective of other players that played for Drew Petzing through Jared Goff and through Amon-Ra St. Brown, which it's very, I mean, it's just unique reporting. I mean, you got to hear Trey McBride and you got to hear Jacoby Brissett both comment on Drew Petzing. And of course, those two players thrived in the system. So they had a lot of great things to say about him. Amon-Ra's excited. Jared Goff is excited. And he called him a quote, home run hire. Talked about, you know, a lot of the I mean, it's a lot of the things we've talked about, how schematically the how perfect the fit is. You know, Jared watching a lot of what the Cardinals kind of are able to do and referencing what the Lions like to do and how it's just a match made in heaven there. Speaking of Nick Firkett, Brad Holmes also commented on Drew Petzing and he liked him a lot as well. Saw him as a really good fit. So hearing the players speak about him and the way that, in which they do, I think we're at a point now where it's, I mean, we could talk all we want about Drew Petzing, but the players are all on board. I mean, they of course, players are going to like to hire, but they don't have to speak as much as they've spoken about him. They don't have to give him the praise like they have. So clearly, it was a collective effort, and Jared Goff loves the guy. I've noticed he's spoken more highly about him than he did John Morton. Because I looked back at his comments last year with John Morton, and he was positive, but with Drew Petzing, it seems like he's all in. He really likes Petzing hire. So you notice that difference there when you look back.
Little inside baseball here. I covered two Super Bowls, I think 2017 and 2018. First one was overwhelming. I mean, it was in Houston. Everything was so spread out. And there's scheduled events, but like, a lot of it, you're just wandering all the different areas, hoping to run into different people. 2018, they obviously were hiring Patricia out of that one. So there was something very easy to focus on that made that one a little bit easier to cover. But still, like, again, you're scrambling to find the people within the event. Dave, very brilliantly, it wasn't while we were covering them together, it was sometime after, but very brilliantly, signed up for a spot on Radio Row. He just has a table on Radio Row. He doesn't have a radio station. He just has his little video camera. But everybody kind of wanders through Radio Row eventually. And so all you have to do is just sit there and wait for people to come to you. And it's just so brilliant. He doesn't have to do anything beyond the big things, the media night, the Pro Bowl, which the NFL smartly kind of put in the same city as Super Bowl. And you're right. He does a great job. He has always had a great instinct for finding the stories, but the greatest instinct was getting that spot on Radio Row. Because, right. We wouldn't have a show this week.
Work smart, not hard, baby.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bertie.
Look, I agree, Jeff. And I did the same thing you did. I cross-referenced Jared's comments about Petzing this week to Dave, to as many comments of his as I could find about John Morton, you know, kind of to open, I guess, OTAs last year when he first spoke with the media about the hire. And, you know, he spoke generally in platitudes. You know, it's been going great so far, he would say. It's been a fun challenge so far, he would say. It's been collaborative so far, he would say. One thing, at least as far as I could tell, that never said, and this kind of dovetails with comments that we've made on this show, is, man, that guy is smart. Man, that guy is sharp. Man, that guy is bright. One thing I know for a fact he never said was that John Morton has the mental dexterity to understand the complexities of what we want to do on offense, which is verbatim what he said this week about Drew Petzing. And I don't mean at all to cut down John Morton here, who obviously is a brilliant offensive mind in his own right, just to highlight the differences between Morton and Petzing as Jared Goff sees them. And I thought it was telling that among all the praise attributed to Dave, he made sure to say, most importantly, he has the intelligence and the mental dexterity to understand the complexities of our offense, but then also to understand how to get the ball to all of the guys that we have on offense, which was maybe the biggest undoing of Morton this past season. You know, he said himself he failed Jamison Williams in the first half of the season by misusing him in offense. And it wasn't until Dan Campbell took over play calling that Jamo's season took off. And he also, and Campbell as well, weren't able to find enough touches for David Montgomery. And that's another kind of for John Morton to solve. And noteworthy today that David Montgomery, I don't know if you guys saw this, he sat down with a NBC Sports setup, they're like panel, I believe, at the Super Bowl. And they asked him about Petsine, and he said, I talked to him briefly. It's pretty evident that he knows exactly what has to happen, and he's prepared for the task at hand. So it'll be good to see what he implements in our offense and how we can improve better than what we were last year. Look, I think if you take, for example, the Seahawks rushing duo, it's a reminder, not that the Lions really need one, of how awesome a two-headed monster in the backfield can be. Like, obviously, Charbonnet is hurt right now, and he likely won't play in the Super Bowl. But for most of the season, that was a Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet tandem in the backfield. It was Walker getting like 13, 14 carries a game, Charbonnet getting like 10 or 11. And when I went back and looked at the disparity this year between Demo and Ja, it just like kind of blew me away all over again. Like, in a year where they played the same number of games, and they averaged the exact same number of yards per touch, 6.6. So should Jahmyr Gibbs really have had 140 more touches than David Montgomery? Like, doesn't that seem like an exceptionally high number, even allowing for the fact that Jahmyr Gibbs is maybe the single most dynamic playmaker in the NFL? Like, shouldn't a more healthy number be 100 more touches, which would be more like 5 to 6 more per game than 8 to 9 more per game? And it sounds like maybe some of Petsine's vision has been relayed in a positive way to Demo, and maybe that's the first step toward rebuilding the bridge between the Lions and David Montgomery.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I didn't know Demo didn't interview, so good on you for bringing that up. That would be my first priority if I'm Drew Petsing and I'm like evaluating the offense and doing my deep dive. Like, oh, David Montgomery did not get the ball enough. Like, we got to fix that. And then have that conversation and be like, we're working on this. We're going to get you right. Like, we want you to stay. Like, you're going to be a big part of this offense. If that's what the Lions want, they probably can't give Petsing that call, but that's what I would do if I were him. Now to hear Goff's comments, I agree, man. Like, there was a contrast between what he was saying about Warren, and it's easy to say that in hindsight now, but I do wonder if he, after this hire, the last hire didn't work out, if he's like, okay, I got to do my own research. Let me like go through all my contacts, hit up anyone that's ever played with him, see what it's like, so it seems like maybe he's doing some of that or just general comments, but that's what you want to hear. I know Justin's brought it up, but like, Goff's a smart guy. He probably wants to work with a smart guy that understands and sees the game the same way as him. And that's not to say Morton is dumb. I'm not saying that. But I do think, we saw the relationship with him and Ben and how well that worked. And if Drew and Ben speak the same language, I can only imagine that's going to get that relationship to a strong foundation, a really good start there. So, that's really what you want to hear. I mean, I'm not sure he's not going to say a ton of stuff about what the offense is going to look like or not going to like dog new OC, but strong comments to start. And shout out Dave, man. I feel like the way he's going, we're going to see him in Italy pretty soon, interviewing Lindsey Vonn about Drew Petsing coming up here soon. man, he's doing a great job.
I what quarterback would throw their new OC under the bus?
Yeah, that would have been epic if he was just like, this is a trash hire.
There's got to be at least one in the NFL that were like would question it. I was trying to think of like who did Jared Goff call? Like what is his connection? I'm like, oh man, he probably called Josh Dobbs after that 2-week stretch they had together.
Yeah,
in Detroit. He might have called Baker, even though I don't think Petsing was ever Baker's QB coach. Obviously, they overlap time. I think Jared's got at least some level of relationship with Kirk Cousins. So it's another one that he could. I mean, he's worked with some quarterbacks that have been in Goff's sphere. So that makes sense. So I'm going to tell a story and I want to quantify it, that we hear things all the time that like maybe we're not able to verify. And that's kind of where the reporting stops, right? Like we get tips and you kind of dig into it and you hit a wall and you can't hit the threshold of justifying reporting it, right? But we had a person reach out pretty early in the off season last year, and they had let me know that you know, Goff and Morton were having some issues kind of communicating, getting on the same page, and Dan Campbell was having to come into some meetings and kind of smooth things over. And I dug into it, hit a wall, and just wasn't something that ever crossed the threshold of being able to report. In the time since, that same person has kind of given me some other information that has turned out to be true in hindsight. So, you know, I'm more inclined, even though I wasn't able to verify it, to believe it now. And, you know, kind of goes with what we're saying, like the praise was never there. And Goff's not the type that he's ever going to throw a coach or a teammate under the bus because he's a polished quarterback, and that's what polished quarterbacks do. But I really do believe that he is excited about this hire more so than he was about Morton. I think the flexibility, the emphasis on offensive flexibility, is something that is reflective that Morton, as much as all coaches really in this current era of the game, should be fitting their scheme to the players. I think Morton tried a little bit more to fit the players to his perceptions of scheme. I would say one of the biggest things that I noticed on film that I know wasn't particularly loved by some of the players was the heavy increase in condensed formation, something I talked to you about kind of late in the season, Will.
Yeah.
You know, some conversations I had had with players, like, you know, there were things they were trying to do. They were trying to force that Morton liked, that Morton picked up from his time with Gruden, that just weren't clicking in the same way with how the offense had operated, you know, at a level previously. And then I know the praise is there for Petzing spreading the ball around or having an idea to spread the ball around. You know, I watched the tape. I looked at the numbers. I mean, it was a pretty heavy McBride offense. And obviously they found balls for Michael Wilson late in the season and Marvin Harrison. But like, there are more weapons in Detroit. It's such a massive challenge to find a way to get the football in a way that they deserve to Jameson Williams, Sam Laporta, Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery, if he's back, Amon-Ra St. Brown. How many times do we ask about Tesla, right? Yeah. Like, I don't think he had more than two targets until like week 15, 14. Like, and you're going to expect him to be a bigger part of the offense going forward. And so I think that's what we'll know really quickly at how equipped Petzing is for this job is, how well he's able to spread the ball around in, I mean, the totality of games, obviously, but also third downs, where we've talked about it plenty of times, where Goff got too fixated on St. Brown, and in the red zone too. You know, that's an area that I just studied with the Cardinals, where it was basically the Trey McBride show. And so if teams can lock in on that stuff, you know, it really kind of limits the versatility of your offense overall.
It is kind of funny because, you know, I'm sure there are times in the first half of the season when Morton was calling plays where he's like, man, so great. We're averaging 30 points a game. Like, you know, our guys are scoring. And they keep asking me about Demo. They keep asking me about J-Mo. Like, we're averaging 30 points a game. Why do they care? Yeah. Probably have to deal with our stuff. But Petzing will have to deal with some of the same things if the offense looks similar. And I don't think it will, but he's going to have to prove that he can actually distribute the ball. It's one thing to say it and to be excited about it, but you got to prove it too. And that is the tough part about this offense is that, you know, you got to manage personalities and touches and whatnot. That's part of the job, but they seem to think he's equipped for it. So I'm curious to see how it looks.
Ben Johnson
just fix the offensive line.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fair takeaway. We can just summarize it with that. Now, when we're going to move on here and get to our kind of a Super Bowl picks, I want to make sure I give a massive shout out to Kyle from Dog and Pony Show Brewing, who is the proud sponsor of Lions Collective, which, by the way, Sunday, Super Bowl, Seahawks Patriots. Come hang out at the brewery. I will be there. I'm doing a watch party there. A bunch of people are going to be there watching the game. Beers. I mean, you got beers, football. What else you need? Okay.
And then I heard $5 beers.
That even better. Okay. Now
we're that's talking. The rumor.
Yeah, that is the rumor. Also, I heard another rumor. Kyle was I was texting him the other day, and you know, there might be some food that might be there as well. Maybe some lose. I'm just hearing some things through the leaves here. So come over and hang out. But for the Super Bowl, you got Patriots, Seahawks. Seahawks are favorites in the game. We kind of had our discussion last week about whether or not snow games should exist or not. But here we are, Patriots, Seahawks. Where are you guys leaning, just kind of leading up into the game here?
I am continuing my take from the conference championship picks. I'm on the Sam Darnold train. You know, I'm enjoying the redemption tour for him, however many years he is into this career. I really, really enjoyed the NFC Championship game as a whole. It was very exciting football. I think this is going to be a little bit of a slobber knocker, to quote Jim Ross.
Love that word.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it's going to be, a physical game, maybe a little bit lower scoring than we think. There's going to be just enough big plays to keep it really exciting, but give me Seattle in this one. And, I don't know, maybe something like, 26-23.
Ooh, okay. You know, something doesn't sit right with me that the Patriots can kind of run with this underdog narrative for Super Bowl. It doesn't sit right with me, but
bastards.
That is the case. Like, everyone's picking the Seahawks, and I'm one of those guys. I will also pick the Seahawks. I do not believe <Yeah. opinion. laughs>
Everyone's doing it, including me.
Yeah, totally. I will not be picking the Patriots. I was a little like hesitant of them in the regular season because that schedule was very light, and you know, you got to win the games on your schedule, and they did. But even their playoff run, I've been more impressed with their defense. But even then, you played Jared Stidham, CJ Stroud when he lost his mind for an entire game. I'm just not entirely moved, I guess. I just think the Seahawks are a way more complete team. That defense is nasty. I think the offense is explosive. Like, they're the most complete team in the NFL this season. I actually thought, I'm sure a lot of people did, the winner of that NFC Championship game would win the Super Bowl. If that was our Super Bowl, I would have been like,
yeah.
But we got another game coming up here. But in terms of pick, I tend to think the Seahawks are going to not run away with it, but it'll be a comfortable win in the end. So I'll go 34-20 Seahawks.
Yeah, I think we're in for a brouhaha ourselves, Justin. Maybe even a $5 brouhaha. Shout out Dog and Pony Show. Go get you some $5 brouhahas. if the game comes down to the Seahawks with the ball on the goal line needing a touchdown to win, just hand it off.
I was just
hand it off. They deserve to win that game back in, what was that, 2015? So maybe they can make right for that 11 years later, 10 years later. I like rooting for certain guys on teams. And I will say, if Carlton Davis hadn't already won one with the Buccaneers, that'd be a guy I would pull for to get his ring this weekend. I really enjoyed covering him here. I thought he was one of the coolest dudes in that locker room, one of the most open guys, one of the most insightful guys. He was nicknamed C. Murda back in high school for, as he said, playing safety like a linebacker and cracking the ass anytime they came across the middle. I think he's just an easy guy to get behind. Love the fact that he's picked off CJ Stroud now four times, right, in their past two games against each other. But he's already got a ring from his time in Tampa. And I've said it before, the Pats and their fan base did not suffer nearly long enough after they ruled the NFL for two decades. So I think the Seahawks are the better team. I think they're the more deserving franchise in this case to win one. And I think that they'll get the job done come Sunday night. I'll say Seahawks 24, Patriots 17.
Well, this is neither here nor there, by the way, but you know how the Lions produced that book at the beginning of the season where they introduce you to the new guys?
Yeah, bro. I asked him about that.
The pizza story?
Yeah.
I ain't no snitch.
Yeah, bro. We bonded over that because I was a Domino's delivery guy back in my day in college, a little extra beer money. And they talking about inside baseball, there was a policy at Domino's where if someone placed an order either online or over the phone, the food got made, and then the person canceled the order, then anyone who was working in the store that night got to have that food for free. So I would have my boys, and I was telling Carlton Davis this, he loved it. I would have my boys call in like three large pizzas, two cinnamon sticks, and like a couple lava cakes. make the food, they'd call back and cancel it, and I would just go deliver it to the dorms. We'd have a free feast like once a week. I was like, how have they not caught on to this? Every time I'm working, there's like multiple orders canceled, and I would just go out, disappear for an hour, come back, and CD was like, oh yeah, bro, that's how you worked it. That's how you worked it. So he knew what was up.
We're never getting Domino's to sponsor this ever.
Domino's gonna show up outside your house in like a van and like take you away. You just broke like some sort of NDA. I just know it.
Bro, I gotta give back my the big pizza holder that kept the pizzas warm.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's still somewhere in my dad's old Volvo station wagon. Gotta track that thing down.
That, you know, that is genius.
You're just playing the system. I made like $4 an hour. That's below minimum wage. This is the least I could do.
Yeah. That's fair.
Jeff, hit us with the pick before you get out of here.
Yeah, well, I want to pick the Patriots. I just can't. I can't do it. This Seahawks team is just too good. And I would like to think Sam Darnold's going to implode, but that defense is going to keep them in it all throughout the game. So I'm with you guys. Give me the Seahawks. I think it'll be a lower scoring game as well. I'll go 2017. Why not? I'll pick the Seahawks in a close game. Even if Darnold throws a pick or two, they're still going to be in it just like they always are. That's what's impressive about them. All right, we'll get out of here. Appreciate you guys. Hit the like button and subscribe.
Wait, hold on. I'm just doing the math here. Can we think about how far you could stretch like $45 at Dog and Pony Show on Sunday night? That's nine beers. Like, go to Dog and Pony Show. You're not going to find better beer specials on Super Bowl Sunday than that.
I have proof of that, Will. I spent $50. It's a lot of beer. Okay. I indulged in a lot of beer, and I looked down and said, it's only $50. That's an incredible amount of points. I wasn't driving.
Of course.
But you are spot on with that. Shout out to them. All right, we'll get out of here. We'll be back next week. Until then, we will catch you all.
Peace.
See you guys.